This is WRFR's Penobscot Bay Report. I'm Ron Huber. On May 29, 2003, I met up with Bernard Raines, builder, owner, and longtime captain of the 60-foot wooden dragger sword boat Irene and Alton of Owl's Head, Maine. When I caught up with Mr. Raines, he was on the Rockland Fish Pier, overseeing his vessel's crew as they mended her net. I asked him if he was still fishing.
No, I can't go fishing anymore. I'm just the owner.
You've done a few years of fishing yourself, then.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you said your boat's out of Owl's Head.
Yeah, she's registered in Owl's Head.
And is that where you guys fish out of?
Well, you can say we fish out of Rockland or Owl's Head or either one. They're both the same. Because we can't fish right outside the island here. We have to go offshore.
So I've seen some of the charts of the different fishing grounds that are off of outside of here.
Yeah.
Are you looking for cod or haddock or pollock or?
All of those.
Yeah.
Plus more, whatever's around. But there's a section that's going to open up first of the month. So yeah. He wants to be ready to go for it. That opens up Monday, I guess.
So you guys got a fair number of days at sea?
88, I think. We had 110, but they took 20% away.
Well, I guess it's still enough to make a little bit of money then.
Well, we did last year, but every year is different.
Yeah.
This year we're on the 20-day block. We'll be done with that this weekend, so he can go out and get fish in the new area that opens up 1st of June.
Now, is that somewhere? That's somewhere inside the Gulf of Maine, then?
Oh, yes. We don't go anywhere else any further anymore. We used to go to Georgia, but we don't anymore.
Is it just that it's there's not enough fish to justify the time and fuel, or is it?
No, I'm getting old and the boat's getting old, so.
Huh.
He's had the boat since I got off, and this has been about 11 years ago. So Brad Hall's been running it.
What is the name of your vessel?
Irene Alton.
Huh.
Two names.
I had a friend whose father used to, he worked out of Owl's Head and out of Rockland. His name, they called him Hokey, Herbert Hoke. He was mostly a herring boat.
Before I built this one here, she's, 26 years old. She's 27 years old again. Before I built this one, I had the Ruth and Mary, and we used to chase herring all along the coast. We chased the catchers. And I worked for Most Pike. His factory was the one that burned down the south end of Rockland. And then he had another factory in Eastport. And we hauled herring for him, for either factory, wherever he wanted it. If the fish was near, between here and Portland, we brought him in here. If it was between Monhegan and, Mount Desert Rock and Eastport, we took him in Eastport for the man. He'd just tell us where to go once we get a load.
Now, this fellow I was talking about, Hokey, of course, I never met him, just his son, but he said that he helped invent one of those pearl things for getting the scales so you could...
He invented it? Okay.
Yeah.
Live in Camden?
Well, yeah, he did. Camden, and I think
man.
In Rockport.
An older man.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about now.
Okay, he was...
Yeah.
Well, his son said he'd like to talk a lot on the radio, so you probably heard him holding forth. Time to time?
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah, Hokey had a machine shop out there in Camden. I know what you're talking about now. And he used to invent stuff.
Yeah, that's him.
Let's see. Clarence Howard lived in Camden. It was a friend of his. And Clarence Howard's relation to us, so that's how we get to know Hokey.
Yeah. Did he ever build anything for you?
Oh, yeah, metalwork. You know, if we get a block busted or if we had something that needed to be welded or burned off, or that stuff, we get him to do it some. But we'd usually try to catch somebody right here at the pier so we didn't have to drive so far. But Camden is pretty close.
Yeah. So you were ground fishing out on George's. Were you always using a trawl? Did you ever do any... tub trawling, or
Oh, I done tarpon probably when I was a kid, but on Georgia's, we fished summers for swordfish. We harpooned swordfish in the summertime. Till that went to pot. I guess we went about eight, nine summers. Winter times, we were scalloping with this boat. Oh, yeah, we scalloped for 10 years, once you know. And then we took the gear off because she's a wood boat and didn't want it to rot underneath all that sheathing. You have to put a lot of sheathing off a scalloping, a lot of iron sheathing.
Is that, you mean on the deck?
On the deck, and the sides, and the rails, everywhere. Everywhere the drags dump and bump. You have to put steel up. Little boats around here, like these lobster boat style, open boat, they'll go scalloping in the winter. That opens up first November. And they'll put big rubber mats down over the side. And then you can take them in, so you know when they're down, because it's only open a couple months. 3 months, I guess.
Now, when I was reading about the scalloping on Georgia's, I guess the New Bedford fleet there, it seemed like it was 24 hours a day once you got out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is 24 hours a day.
Is that right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
So you'd be ground fishing day and night just...
As long as the weather lets them. Until they use up the fuel, then they come home. Yeah.
Did you ever pull up anything interesting, like some of those tree corals or any old artifacts or anything?
Oh, yes, but there's not so much tree corals left. Hmm. There was a lot down off, to the northeast of Mount Desert. We used to call them the trees when I went with Father. And they looked like a tree that in the wintertime, they no limbs and nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, no leaves and nothing. And they'd snarl up in your net because they were growing on the bottom. And I think there are probably some of them still there, especially where there's rocks.
Yeah.
Where the good bottom was, where we could tell, that's where we get into them.
I think they found a bunch, I was reading, off of Mount Desert Rock, somewhere to the southwest of it there.
Yeah, it's been all around Mount Desert, those trees. We call them trees. I got a little piece of home, it's only about that big. Should have kept some of the others, but we just, you know, it was such a nuisance, we just cleared it out of the net and watched the old boy. Huh. We didn't only have that. We had all kind of aluminum pieces off airplanes, rocket launches out there, you know, where they practiced the Second World War. You get those in your net and they'd tear your pieces, but because they had stainless steel screws on them, they held wiring. The wiring was all dangling around. It was mounts that held rockets under planes from Brunswick. They shoot it at Seal Island. That was their practice on Seal Island. The only nasty odd things we picked up is barrels of dirty oil that a ship will throw the heck overboard, and it happened to be on bottom while we're going to tow. They don't, because they don't know where.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I think they got laws against that. But we've towed up, several times we've towed up a barrel of, it was closed up both ends with dirty oil, taken out of an engine. But you see, it starts rusting after it's down there. The second one we took out, of course, it was leaking out through. First one we took out was, hadn't been there long, so that wasn't such a mess. But that second one messed us up terrible.
What could you do with those barrels? Just send them back over?
Well, we'd go out, find a rock pile somewhere, dump them on the rock pile. But that one that was leaking, there, we couldn't bring it in. We brought in the one that was full. They just take it. Of course, we didn't have this pier here then. But just take it up to one of these garages just like you do nowadays.
Mm-hmm. And they can dump off take that oil.
Yeah.
Been in any storms on this fella?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had 2-3 on Georgia's. It's pretty bad. Oh, we had one on Cash's. It was bad. We were scalloping on Cash's, and there was three little boats out from Friendship. They came out there tub trawling. And breezed out in the middle of the night. We was anchored, and they was 1, 2, 3. There was five Friendship boats. I may be wrong. Maybe it was just four. Anyway, come in daylight, they would get nervous because it was so rough there. They were open boats, same as the lobster boat, little ones.
Oh.
And they threw everything they had aboard there overboard. And they couldn't go home because the wind came around northwest. And they had, of course, to go home, Friendship was northwest. That's almost northwest.
Oh.
Right into it. They couldn't go anywhere. So we went to Promise Down, and we invited them to come along with us. So they did. Took us all day to get there, but that's the only
did
way.
Did you sort of use yourself as a lead for them? Or?
No. I just kept... We slowed up and just kept an eye on them. They finally... It was awful foggy, so I kept hearing them talking together, and they were pretty nervous, so I told them. I told them, I guess I ain't going to go home. I ain't going to Rockville. I'm going somewhere. It might be Gloucester or some other place. So we headed for Gloucester, and she'd almost roll over because we were side to it then. I said, well, I guess I can't make Gloucester. I'm going to Promise Town, and if you fellas want to come with us, you're welcome to. Well, they said, we've been... running since daylight, we've been running for 3 hours, we must be getting pretty near home. And I says, I don't like to insult you, but I've been watching on the radar, and you haven't gone more than 3 miles in all that time.
That was that much of a blow out there, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So one boat went to, I guess he was with them or outside of them somewhere. He was out there either trawling, I think he was trawling. But he went to Southwest Harbor, down to Bass Harbor. He laid in Bass Harbor. He went there but stole the windows out of it before he got home. And these fellows here, they were so frightened. They had to stop every 20 minutes or so and pump them out. They couldn't keep going. So we just jogged along till they caught up with us.
But sounds like you got them back to land, then.
Well, yeah, as soon as I could see them when they come out of the fog, and I keep an eye on them. Before that, I could only see them once in a while on radar. When I say once in a while, you see the seas would come up here, maybe on the other side of the sea, I'd lose them.
Oh.
By and by, they'd come up on top of the sea, they'd come up underneath and lift them up, then I'd see them. But then as soon as they come out of the fog, we could only see... Oh, fast me at that red bellboy out there. And as soon as they come out of the fog, I kept counting them until they was all together. And then they ran along.
But they had to throw out all their fish and everything? This...
Well, they never hauled the trawl.
Huh.
They was going to haul it that day. So. But the breeze come up in the night and made it nasty. Yeah, I can't remember their name. One of them was Mitchell from Friendship. I forget the names of the others. Memory's going bad anyway.
Well, I'm glad I have the opportunity to record a little bit of it before it all goes then. Any advice you'd give people that are just getting into the business now?
Well, there's not many people, not anybody, I guess, getting into the business of dragging. Because dragging has been regulated so bad. And we're making a go of it yet. Only because we had more days to fish with, start with. We had to prove that of 3 years way back in, I don't know, 80 or something. And they took an average of those 3 years, and that's what they give us for the days to fish on. So we had 120 days at one time, but they've been cutting it down, so we only got about 88 now.
Still enough to make a living, I guess, huh?
Well, we did last year, but... Some of the fish are showing up, codfish, and haddock showing up a little better. Yeah, if we can get enough, I guess they can make a go. If the boys can make a go...
Well, how long's your captain been fishing for you?
Well, he went with me for... Let's see, he's been captain on us since I came ashore 11 years ago. And he went with us about 12 years before that.
So he knows what he's doing then.
Oh, yes. If I went out there now, I wouldn't be able to catch a share. I didn't show us along. He's got all the plots down.
Yeah.
Plots is a chart.
It's a chart
a machine
with... You actually got your actual runs on it.
Yeah, as he's fishing, The chart is a picture chart, probably that square.
Oh.
Yeah, and got paper on it. We got two charts. The other one's computer. It goes in a disk. But the paper one is one you still use because that's the tolls we learned on when I was still aboard there, and we had a lot of tolls there. Well, he's made lots more than what I ever did. Used the ones that I had, and he made a lot more.
So do you still have the charts from back when you were fishing?
Oh, yeah. It's nothing but a piece of paper, plain paper, like tracing paper, just plain white.
Uh-huh.
And then you get a little marker that will chase it by satellites. And the old one just went by Loran. And satellite, which is in the computer, is more accurate, they say. So we get them on both, but the one that's on the papers goes by Loran Station, and I guess they're going to close them pretty soon. But probably that machine will have to go up the dump.
Now, Loran, how long was that around? About 20 years?
Loran was invented in the Second World War.
Oh.
Between England and us. I think it was between England and America. So as soon as the war was over, then we could buy surplus machines. But those machines, they was very ticklish to learn how to run them, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. You had to adjust them all the time in order to find out where you are. Now it's all automatic. See, they get at Loran stations down in Buzzard Bay. They got another one that's way up in Canada somewhere. Then they got another one over in the United States, like, I don't know if it's New York or beyond that, but they send the signal out. One of them will send the signal out, and these two here will hear it, and they'll bounce it back.
So you can triangulate where you are, then?
Right.
Huh.
In the old days, we had to line up little posts. That was the signals coming out. You know, had master signal, and then you had these return signals coming. And you had to line them up. When you lined them up, they give you a number on the chart.
Mm-hmm.
But then you would have to get another signal from this one and that one. Take it from this one, and this one. So that signal come back, gives you a line this way, this one, gives you a line that's going this way, see.
You were fishing before there was Loran,
Well, when I first went with Father, we didn't have any, we didn't have no radio, no depth finder or anything. I had a compass, and we had a watch, and had his memory, that was it. And we had a mark boy. So we'd go offshore where he knew all these spots. So where he knew there was good bottom, he'd go off and find that good bottom. And if we wanted to sound, see how kind of bottom was, I'd use the old-fashioned lead with a little tallow on the bottom.
Uh-huh.
You find that nice piece of bottom, and it seems to be the same all the way around for quite a little way. Then you put a mark buoy down, and you tow, keep towing until you bump. And you turn away from that, over this way until you bump. So he would have several places you could fish like that. And a lot of the places was near shore, so if it was clear, we used marks from shore, and they would tell us where we were. One of the famous marks that we always had was the two stacks at cement plant. Of course, they're gone now, but you could see them that way, mm-hmm. or they'd open up, or they'd close. And they would also be over Matinic, or they'd be over Tennant's Harbor, or they'd be over Mahiggins, and that would tell you where you were right there. So he'd write all those marks down, and that's how we'd find the bottom, because it was a clear day.
Huh.
Well, Father had marks for a lot of tolls when I started, and he had to give it up. So I used them until the machine came out. When the machine came out, then we used the machine.
Mm-hmm.
But we just increased the knowledge that Father already had. He made a toll that was that big, say. Then as soon as the machine came out, we found out there might be a little further over.
Oh, right. But it started off with what he found.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was the same with everybody. New Harbor, there was a lot of fellas that started dragging out of New Harbor, and the Rosses and Reeds and the different ones started out of Rockland here. And they all started out the same way. They had to find bottom, know where it was.
Mm-hmm.
They would expand it as they could.
That's
first with the bump system and then with the machine when it came out.
Huh. Well, that seems to make sense there. You just find the edges of that flat area by bumping into some ledge or something.
Well, your doors will rattle, say. Because this door here will go out there. Mm-hmm. That door there will go out there. That's what spreads in there.
You get to where you can feel how those doors are bouncing on the bottom then.
Yeah. This one here was bouncing in the rock. The wires was rattling. And you could see them rattle. You could feel it anyway. And you know the rock, that one's touching rock. So you keep away from it. She smoothens out. Now you keep away from it too far, and you find out the other one hits one, you're going up in a crack or something. You take a chance, and if you can keep them smooth for a while, that might be a place nobody ever fished.
Almost like a blind man feeling your way into there.
Exactly. And you might get a good set fit of fish in there, because nobody's been in that crack before. So you write that down, remember it, see, for next time. That's your little secret.
Oh.
Pass it on to your son. I'm glad I'm a son. I never know how to fish. Anyway, they might pass it on to some of their friends, but not too often. Everybody had a lot of secret little toes. Yeah.
Have you kept your log books from back then?
No, I haven't. And I'm ashamed that I didn't. I should have. When we get to, mechanize, as they call it now, we get radar. And we get sounding machine, and some sounding machines get Loran in it, and some satellite even in the other one. So now we rely on it. If we went out there now, we lost the power, so none of them would run. We wouldn't be able to find a way home. That's how bad we got.
Oh, that's the downside of getting so dependent on all that, then.
But the ones that was the smartest in navigating without any machines was those early sardine carriers, because they had to go get herring and get them to the sardine factory so that they could call early in the morning, so they could call the women in cuts. So they were steaming all night, and all they had was a compass and that watch. Clock.
Maybe a few stars if they were lucky.
Well, a good many of them got ashore and got lost, but those fellows were smart. I went with Sherman Lord on the Jacob Pike, and he had everything written down in a little booklet. It was so old, the pages was coming out, so you had to keep sure to put them in there.
Mm.
Yeah, and he knew where to find them all. If we was going to go over to New Harbor, we would say, this afternoon, so to be there when the boys go out and catch some herring, or if somebody just caught some there and wanted to go get them. If it was thick of fog, he had that timed right out, and you opened the throttle up on the engine, and you went right along 10 knots. You didn't bother to slow down because it took you so many minutes from this buoy to that buoy, see? Now when you almost get there, just before the last minute, then you slow down and listen. Try to find that buoy. And you didn't leave it unless you found something you recognized.
Okay.
You hunt around for that buoy, see? And then there was another course for another place. There would be a bald head, like down to White Head, where there's deep water when you come up to it. So you steam right along, the time run out.
Yeah.
And you slow down and listen. Perhaps if it was bald head, like on down the White Head in many places where there's deep water up against the bank, you'd hear the foo washing, see? So one of us have to get up on the bow and listen.
And listen for him.
Yeah. You'd slow all the way down. And by and by, you'd see it come out of the fog. And then you've got to recognize it. You can't take a chance that it's it. Just a piece of land might not be it, see. But you got to recognize it, because all these places look, we knew just how they're supposed to look.
That's something you had to learn the hard way, then.
They learned it the hard way, which was harder than us. Father always liked to work offshore, away from the island.
Okay.
That's why he went dragging.
Yeah. Thank you very much, sir.
I wouldn't tell a lie.
You were listening to a May 29, 2003 interview of Bernard Raines, the builder, owner, and longtime captain of the 60-foot commercial fishing vessel Irene and Alton of Owlshead, Maine. Mr. Alton was interviewed by Ron Huber of WRFR Community Radio in Rockland, Maine.